Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 23, October 25, 2011. Leo works the pile up. Good evening, everybody. This is Ham Nation, a wonderful program about ham radio, and tonight's going to be really special again. Of course, every one of these are special, but tonight's going to be really something. So call all your neighbors and all your ham radio buddies, because we're going to make some big contacts tonight through a very unique system at W6TWT. And to help do that, we have Gordo. Gordo is in Costa Mesa. Gordo, how are you doing? WB6NOA. Look at him.
Everything is fine, Bob, and we can't wait to hear Leo on the air. And hi to Ray, that is his air manager.
Yeah, Ray Novak from ICOM is here. Hello, guys. Good to be back. I missed you.
Well, I know that you have been busy. And we also have George standing by. He's firing up all of his smoke and solder, Leo. He'll be here a little later.
Good.
But we've got so much going on, we didn't have enough input on the Skype board. But George will be around in a little bit and see what he can burn, solder. But we wanted everybody to know that it is Halloween week here on Ham Nation. So you never know what's going to slide by.
Ooh. And
we'll have surprises throughout the show. Before we get going, because we've got a wonderful guest tonight, I've been talking about my friend Terry for a long time. Terry's worked over 200 countries with indoor antennas, and he's going to show us how he did this tonight. So in just a couple of minutes, we'll have Terry on. But you remember, Leo, we had a guy that got his license because of Ham Nation. He's one of about 300 that we're counting right now. Clayton, W6CEC, he's the production manager for the Bull Riders.
Oh, that's great.
And they start their finals in Las Vegas tomorrow. So you can guess where Sarah and I will be. She's got her cowboy boots on and we'll be there. So I wanted to let everybody know that if you're around Las Vegas, you can give old Clayton a call, W6CEC. He's really into ham radio since he found about Ham Nation, and he's been a friend for a long time. The guys are listening on 14282 and 7204. Now, that might change in just a little bit, but we got a lot of things going on for that. And one last thing, Leo, I'm very proud of this, and you should be noted that Ham Nation and you personally have a lot to do with this. I got news today about ham radio and the license, what's happened. In December of 2001, we had 683 hams.
683,000, I hope.
Thousand.
Okay.
In September.
That's some growth.
Me worried.
Yeah. In September, it went to 700,221.
Wow, that's great.
All right.
That's great.
Woo!
And I have emails to verify this. Gordo and I get them daily. George has got bunches.
It's like 17,000 new hams. That's amazing.
Well, we're just very, very proud, because we know 200 or 300 of those is because of Ham Nation and all of
right.
the TWiT family. And we're excited about that. It just keeps growing. And we just wanted to let you know about that. Because
has it been doing that all along, Bob, or is this something new? I mean, it's my guess. I'm just imagining that for a while, maybe not ham licenses were going down.
They were.
Yeah.
That was the whole deal.
Yeah.
They went down below, where are we at? They went down along about 2005, and came back up a little, then they went back down, and now all of a sudden, they're coming back up.
Well, and, we also have to thank the guy I met at PacifiCon, because, you know, I was at PacifiCon, Gordo and I, during the radio show last weekend. And I met a guy named Bruce Perrins, who is one of the people responsible for getting code out of the test. And I have to think that has something to do with it, too.
It did.
Yeah.
It did.
It certainly made a difference for me.
And Gordo, you know, has a lot to do with that, because he helps him write some of the test questions and so on. And you really have to be applauded, Gordo, for all the work you do with the FCC and everybody else. We're very proud
of
you.
Well, thank you. And now, Leo, folks are wanting to learn the code more than ever because they're no longer worried about having to take the dreaded code test.
It's no pressure, and it doesn't make – I still want to learn it. I don't want to not learn it. It just was – that was the barrier to taking the test and getting the license in the first place, is that I had to learn that first. So I think it's worked out. Don't you think? I mean, I'm sure there was some resistance when people said, let's get rid of code, but I think it's worked out quite well.
It has. Yep. We see CW as more and more folks wanting to learn it.
Yeah. I can't wait to learn it.
Yeah. And it's one of those things that now it's not a pressure. And we're seeing so many of the guys that coming on the air and finding out, oh, this phone is fine, but what's all this stuff down here? And it's a new language.
It is. And in fact, I'm terrified because a little later on, I'm going to be doing some long distance high frequency DXing to Europe, I believe.
All right.
Yeah, we'll explain that in a bit. Thanks to Ray Novak, ICOM, and Tim Duffy. It's gonna be exciting.
Tim Duffy standing by with his great contestation, and Ray Novak's there to hook everything up. So away we'll go.
There it is.
But before we get to that, and while you guys get things all straightened out, I want to bring Terry on WZERO-FM. Terry's in St. Louis. And I've known Terry since he was about 12. I was playing the organ at the Holiday Inn, and his father was a well-known musician here in St. Louis. And one night he brought in his son, a little Terry, and we started talking. And he's like, he knew all about ham radio. And I'm going, wait a minute. And we have been friends all these years, and I'm very proud of what he's done with his life. And what's really crazy is that He like all of us, he was really into ham radio, and he moved into this neighborhood that says, you can't do that.
Oh, I know that feeling.
Well, Terry says, I can do that. And boy, did he. So, Terry, are you there tonight in West County, St. Louis?
I am, Bob. Good to see everybody. And I'm sorry about the quality of the picture from here.
Well, the pictures we want to look at tonight are all of your wonderful slides. We're going to go through them, but I want to turn the microphone to you and give us a little bit of history of what went on and so on before Alex starts rolling some of your beautiful pictures.
Sure. You touched on it a little bit. I met Bob at the Holiday Inn, and he had behind him on the stage what I think is probably the first electronic drum machine that anybody had ever heard of before the term was ever coined. He had on a board behind him bongos and timbales and maracas and xylophones, all with mallets playing them. And he took an intermission. He came to sit with my family and I. And I asked him, I said, are you activating those instruments on the board with solenoids? And Bob looked at me and says, what do you know about electronics? And I said, well, I just got my ham license. And the rest is history. Like Bob said, he's been a cherished friend for many, many, many years. So, Alex, if you want to go ahead and put up the slide two, I guess we'll start with the other one's incidental. But when I got my license in 1962, my parents were very, very supportive and agreeable. My first antenna, as Bob said, my dad was a musician and worked at the local NBC affiliates here in St. Louis. And I used to go down and sit and watch the shows and met a lot of the engineers and that. And one of them took me under his wing. And for those of you that don't know the terminology, Elmer is what we affectionately call the guy or people who help us along the road to getting into amateur radio. And my Elmer was a KSD-TV broadcast engineer by the name of O.J. McQuigg. And we called him Mac, obviously. He helped me build my very first antenna, which was a 40-meter dipole. And I strung it between two peach trees in the backyard and actually started making contacts. And it was the beginning of a lifelong relationship with our hobby and a whole bunch of new friends. My first antennas were long wires and dipoles, and that was a great part of my ham career. And then in the mid-80s, I bought a house, and I was able to put up a 35-foot Rhone 25G tower, side bracketed to the side of the house, and I got a nice tri-bander on top of it, and really started knocking down some contacts. And, of course, the sunspot cycles back then, Bob, you recall, were a whole lot different than they are today. So a little bit of an antenna did much more then, but you can still do good things with them. I had a couple of 4, 5, 6 BTVs by Hustler Verticals, but my best antenna that I ever had in my life was this tri-bander at 35 feet. And after that, my ability to put antennas up and out went down. And I moved into an apartment for a while, and I then bought a condo. And everybody seemed to have covenants and restrictions against antennas. If you go on, and this points to the point that you and Leo just made about the ham radio hobby growing. There are so many newcomers and people that didn't get into the hobby years and years ago that are just getting started or coming back to the hobby, and things have all changed. They can't necessarily put up the tower or the big vertical that they want, and there's got to be a way to get around that. Many of them are going on the various ham radio sites, internet sites, and posting requests for help. And it breaks my heart that some of these guys are basically being told, if you can't have 3 stacked monobanders on a rotating 200-foot tower, then you might as well give up the hobby and go fishing. We've all heard that. I mean, and very few people are actually being supportive of these newcomers and old-timers that are moving to retirement centers and still want to stay active in the hobby. So I started a hobby within a hobby, I guess, and found myself tinkering with stealth and attic antennas that I could tuck away in the attic and go unnoticed. And I did, you know, flagpole verticals and all kinds of things like that. But I found out that pretty much everything works. And if you're having fun with it, it works even better.
Right.
And it's not about the way you have to do it. It's, you know, everybody enjoys a hobby on their own level. I've got a friend that likes to sit in a lawn chair next to a farm pond and fish all day. And he's got about $8 worth of gear. And I got another friend that's got a $50,000 bass boat that he drags all over the country, and he's gone for weeks at a time fishing, but that's the way he enjoys the hobby. That doesn't mean the guy in the lawn chair next to the farm pond is having any less fun. And as Bob said, over the years, I've cobbled together all kinds of strange wire antennas. I've experimented. I've done window screens. I've done aluminum lawn chairs. I've loaded up everything and made contacts on them. So to say something doesn't work, it's all a matter of degrees. Alex, can we have slide number 3 there? Let's start with that one. This is an ISO loop. This is a small, about 3-foot diameter loop that's got a motorized controlled capacitor in it. It's a very high Q, low bandwidth antenna that goes through an attic opening in the ceiling into the smallest of attics. I mounted mine on a broomstick in a condo that I had. They're a very narrow banded, which means that if you change frequencies any distance at all, you got to retweak that antenna by running the motor that turns the capacitor, and sometimes you can tune right past the sweet spot. It's a kind of a pain, but when it works very well on transmit and receive. And I used that thing, it's still in my attic today. I've used it for a number of different applications. Slide 4 will show you an SG230 smart tuner antenna coupler from SGC. And this was one of the very first automatic antenna tuners on the market. It was very pricey back then, somewhere around the 90s. But it was something that I could load virtually every hunk of wire or any device that I connected to it. And it's There are a lot of less expensive automatic antenna tuners that mount at the antenna that are available today for sale by the various amateur radio vendors and work well in attic environments. Now, you know, virtually every antenna in an attic is a compromise antenna. And if you understand that, then you understand the fact that you're dealing with whatever you can get, you're happy with. And to me, that led to more experimenting and more gimmicks and so forth. This is a disclaimer I probably should have started with. I'm not an antenna scholar. I think I had 464 divided by frequency in megahertz in indelible ink on the back of my hand since I was 11 years old. And there are guys that I talk to that they know the theory, they know the formulas. I know enough to get me started. I've got some basic test equipment, antenna analyzer, a field strength meter, because flat SWR does not always mean the antenna is resonating or putting out a signal that somebody can hear, and a dummy load. And that's pretty much the extent. So I'm not a scholar of antenna and antenna theory. I'm a trier and a tinkerer. And I can tell you that I've had an awful lot of fun finding new ways to get on the air and put a signal out. And I've had enough success to make me happy. I don't win contests. I don't win awards, but I'm happy in my hobby, and I'm still passionate about it after 50 years. The slide 5 shows a drawing from the SGC Smart Tuner manual. I tried this in my condo with the SGC tuner, and it's about three or four feet in diameter. And for those of you that aren't seeing the slides tonight, it's pegs or nails spaced 3 or 4 feet apart with 70 to 90 feet of plain old wire wrapped around it and connected to the smart tuner. Now, that worked pretty well for me. I did it for a while and then moved on to other things. For instance, slide 5 is a delta loop, and I've got that in my attic right now with the coupler, loading it, driving it from the corner. And I have to say it's okay. Not the best thing I've ever done. I'm going to try putting a few more few more loops on it. But it pretty much an A-B test. Oh, good, Alex. Thank you. In A-B test, other antennas have outperformed it. But it's if you got a space in the attic for this and it works and you can make contacts, we used to say it beats a sharp stick in the eye. Slide 6 is, that was 6. I'm sorry. That was the delta loop. Here's one in slide 7. This is not for the faint of heart, guys. This is something that you probably go out and start measuring for when your spouse is out for the day, because it will certainly stir up some questions and maybe even some loud voiced orders. But what I did is I had a seamless gutter, and seamless meaning one long run of it, down the back of a townhouse that I owned. And it was connected to 2 equal length downspouts. And what I did was measure the exact center of the horizontal length of that aluminum seamless gutter, and I cut an inch out of the center of it. Now, before I did this, I went to the hardware store and made sure that I could get a piece of plastic guttering of the same style and the same color as the aluminum guttering. So I knew that I could patch the hole if all things failed. Ran coax up the back of the house and the center conductor to a sheet metal screw and a star washer through the plastic into the left half of the seamless gutter. Can you put that back up again for me, Alex, please? Much more fun to look at that than me. And then the other conductor from the coax to the right side with a screw, and then sealed the inside of the gutter real well so it still functioned properly and didn't leak. From the ground, actually, my cable drop to my house was a lot more attractive than the cable TV installations that I've seen around the area that come flapping in the wind and hanging down the side of the house. So it really, if it went noticed, it was because it was a nice installation and it was attractive. Don't forget when you run a coax or ladder line or some kind of transmission line into the house, don't forget the drip loop at the bottom, because there's nothing that raises the wrath of other people in the house more than having their bed wet or their pillow soggy because water ran into the house through that hole that the cable came through. This kind of antenna probably ought to always have an antenna tuner of some sort. I was able to get it to tune okay with the internal tuner in my rig at the time, but I did much better. I got much better output, signal output from that antenna when I used an external tuner. Also, if you're going to incorporate the two downspouts, and you really need to make sure that they're symmetrical, they're the same length, you want to make sure you tie those in well with the horizontal strip with some sheet metal screws so you've got conductivity all the way around. The next one was the next slide is a fun antenna. I wrote an article for Hints and Kinks, and QST was kind enough to post it and kind enough to let me use my drawing with permission. And the little cord stoppers. And I was playing with this for a long time. You either had, every time you adjusted the end of an antenna, a wire dipole antenna, through an insulator like this, and golly, Bob, I know that you've done this hundreds of times, you had to rewrap the wire, and it was usually kinky stuck you in the hand and things like that. I started playing with these little cord stoppers, and they're little springy things that when you push them down, it releases the cord. And when you put it back together and you let it go, it grabs the wires again, and the insulator's over here, as you could see in the drawing. And we used to use these little clips or these little U-bolts from the electrical department to do that, and then you had to have a wrench to tighten it down and everything. And I saw these in store one day, and I picked them up, and I made a dipole out of it that I took down to the Cayman Islands with me as ZF2FM, and set it up. The dipole would fit in the hotel room, half of it, and then the other half would go out the sliding glass door and over a balcony to a tree nearby. And when I wanted to change bands, I had to pull in both ends of the antenna and press the button and change the length of the antenna so the end of it came to a predetermined mark that I put on the long piece of the dipole that goes back to the center conductor. And I knew that the second one was 17 meters and the third one was 12-meter band and so forth. So it was very easy for me to change antennas. That was a fun project. And I did go to breakfast in the hotel one morning and left the antenna up in the room. The half of the antenna that was still in the hotel room was tied to a coffee pot over in a little kitchenette.
Oh, the cleaning lady must have loved you.
And housekeeping came in, I'm sure, and she saw my radio sitting there with the headphones and the marker.
You were a spy.
CIA guy sitting right here, you know? So we had some good laughs about that. But I've used that antenna temporarily around condos and restricted communities, and I've used it in the attic. The only bad thing about the attic is when you want to change bands. In my house, it's a four-story climb.
Hey, Terry, out of all those slides that you've got and the things you're doing, one of the most, I think, impressive things, and you might want to forward up to that because we're starting to get close to the time for Leo to take over. You might want to look at your what you call the toilet tower. What a very unique way to mount an antenna in the attic.
In the mid-90s, I got lucky and I had the opportunity to build a home. And I got to work with the builder, and I gave a lot of thought. And I would recommend you do this, whether you're remodeling or adding an addition or whatever. But work with your builder to do the things that might make your ham radio hobby more enjoyable and easier to use.
Yeah.
So I had the builder build a room upstairs with no drywall that was 16 by 16 with an 8-foot ceiling. And I was going to put a tri-bander up there, and I had it all measured out and figured and the whole 9 yards. Well, something got by me, and it turned out that the Tribander wouldn't fit. So there's a view of the new home construction. This was designed coming up from the second floor. There's another one, a view there. The builder built me a catwalk. I want to stress this. Don't ever modify the trusses in the attic or the roof to accommodate an antenna. Those things are complicated. They need an engineering stamp. It's very, very, you think, man, if I could just move this one truss 6 inches, I can turn an antenna up here. Don't do it, folks. Please don't.
No.
You may never sell your home again if you modify that roof truss to accommodate an antenna. So anyway, there's my DXEE up there hanging near the peak of the roof. And below it was a Wark band dipole that I wanted to make. When I bought the DXEE, I usually make my antennas. That's a real nice antenna by Alpha Delta. And I bought that temporarily while I get the other antenna things worked out. And it's still up there, and I use it every day. But I wish the roof fence hadn't been aluminum, but that was something else that got by me. But for the most part, I've got a very, very nice space up there. And if let's see.
That's the way to do it, is to have a floor up there. And
well, and it was planned, and I had the opportunity, and that's an exceptional opportunity for a ham to have. If you look at
talk about slide, that mount, I forget which slide it is. Talk about that mount where you mount it to. I think you called it the toilet tower. That's really cool.
27.
Yeah, that is.
I knew that I had to mount. I finally got a 6 meter three element Yagi up there, and I wanted to mount it on something sturdy that bolted to the floor, and I didn't have anything. So I started rummaging through my parts bin, and I had these PVC toilet parts. And I started gluing them together, and then I thought, well, with the torque of the rotor, I may need to put some screws in it. So I got sheet metal screws and PVC glue and all kinds of stuff in these cobbled together pieces of PVC pipe that hold the rotor and the three element 6 meter beam. And Bob, I can tell you, in all my years, all the plumbing projects that I've done, that's the only one that has yet to leak.
Well, last but not least, I want you to show the fan dipole. That's amazing how you mounted it up there. I want you to show everybody how you did that in the attic. Again, I'm not sure what number of the slide, but that is really cool how you mounted the fan dipole. And we've talked about it before. Leo built a 40-meter dipole.
I got my dipole still here.
I missed that. Yeah. I missed that. Yeah.
Look how he mounted that.
It's here somewhere. 14?
18.
18, yeah.
Terry, you say you're not an antenna guru, but I think you've qualified just by virtue of building more of them.
I've had a lot of people that helped, and I've learned a lot along the way. There's the that's a homebrew dipole that I made. I used a quarter-inch cold water supply line for those spacers. And again, that's as close to plumbing as I like to get. And the center insulator choke is a commercially available unit that serves the purpose of feeding both sides of the antenna and having a coax connection and choking some stuff off the coax that might cause interference and so forth in the house. So it's all fun, and it's all experimental, and you know, I've got dozens and dozens and dozens more, and they never get old. I just keep moving them, changing them.
If we only had an attic in the Twit Brick House, I got the dipole, I just had toilet parts.
There you go.
I just need an attic.
Leo, I'll put you together a toilet tower.
Just really cool. Boy. And you've learned, I've had
Terry,
so much.
How many countries did you work? How many countries?
I just loaded up a couple of new contacts the other day, and I didn't look at it, but it's just over 240 with 100 watts of power or less.
Wow!
And antennas that I've messed around with, that either I saw a design and tried it in the attic. Just my bottom line is this: is if you can't put an antenna outside, don't give up. I've used burglar alarm tape on the eaves of the house, and vertical stuck in the hole, the umbrella hole in a patio table out on the deck.
That is fabulous.
Think about it.
Congratulations.
Thanks, Gordon. Good to see you, and nice to meet you. I have read your stuff, and it's a pleasure to be on with you guys.
Well, it's really been great to have you, Terry, and I appreciate all that that you've done for Ham Radio. You write a lot of articles, and I see you on eHam a lot, so keep it all going, and maybe we'll have you back again sometime to go through some more of these great theories. The chat room is going crazy because they all agree that you actually have a hobby within the hobby.
Yeah.
Building antennas is just so much fun.
Yeah.
And now when you have to build it in your attic, that's even crazier. But we appreciate you coming on tonight and explaining a few of your wonderful antennas, and congrats on all the countries you've worked. And maybe we'll see about having you back again soon, and we'll talk some more because there's so much to talk about.
I want to see his ham shack, but mostly I want to see his antenna shifter changer. he must have quite a little tuner there for it. Yeah. How many antennas do you have active right now, Terry?
I can select 8 or 9 bands.
Wow.
From the operating desk right
That's
now.
Great.
So, and they're all in the attic.
That's great. It's amazing. Oh. Really neat. I want to see his ham shack.
It's been fun. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks,
and Bob, hope to see you soon.
Well, I look forward to hearing you on the air. And
go Cardinals.
Go Cards.
Cardinals. That's right. All right. Well, thanks so much, Terry. 7-3. And we'll see you soon.
7-3, Bob. Thank you.
Yeah. Fascinating.
So you could do that. Or you could go to Tim Duffy and say, "Can I borrow a 150-foot mast? Would you mind?"
It's funny to go from one extreme to the other, where you're making your own wire antennas to what we're going to.
I feel guilty.
Well, Leo, I'll tell you what we'll do. Going to give you about 2 minutes here to get things all set.
Okay.
And then we're going to come back over to you, Tim and Ray. But let's run Newsline a couple of minutes of that. And get you guys all set. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes while Don Wilbanks tells us what's been going on the ham radio networks.
From the Amateur Radio Newsline, these are the Ham Nation headlines for October 25th, 2011. A Seal Beach, California ham was the innocent victim of a mass murderer. On Wednesday, October 12th, Scott DeCray is alleged to have opened fire in a hairstyling salon where his ex-wife was a stylist. She and 8 others were killed in the rampage. One of those was David Cowett, N6DAC, who was sitting in his vehicle nearby as the gunman made his escape and shot him for no apparent reason. A memorial and tribute to N6DAC took place October 17th at the diner where he died, with many of his friends in attendance. Hams in Thailand are now first-line emergency responders. This as massive flooding rages across parts of that nation. The death toll from the most devastating flooding to hit Thailand in over 60 years has now risen to nearly 300. This following monsoon rains that have swept across that nation since late July. Amateur Radio has been assisting with flood relief communications by helping victims in the affected areas. As we go to air, Thai hams are using the Radio Amateur Society of Thailand club station HS0AC and have also set up shop at a special flood relief center at Bangkok's Don Muang Airport. Figures released by the American Radio Relay League say the number of United States hams now stands at a record high number of 700,000. The number of technicians peaked in March 2011 at 342,572, while September 2011 saw both generals and extras each peak respectively in their number of license holders. Surrey Satellite Technology Limited has celebrated the 30th anniversary of the orbiting of UOSAT-1. Launched into orbit October 6, 1981, UOSAT-1 was designed and built by a team from the University of Surrey, led by its founder, Sir Martin Sweeting, G3YJO. UOSAT-1, also known as UOSAT Oscar 9, was a scientific and educational low-Earth orbit satellite containing many experiments and beacons, but no amateur transponders. The satellite remained fully operational until it re-entered October 13, 1989. For details on these stories and more, point your web browser to www.arnewsline.org. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. Now back to Ham Nation.
All right, guys.
Oh, we're on.
You're on. I know, you're over there.
Where's my camera? I know. We went over to the Ham Shack. Ray Novak is here from ICOM. And don't go anywhere, Gordo and Bob. I still need your help on this.
We're here.
I think K3LR is pretty legendary among hams, Tim Duffy.
At least in the contest area.
Yeah. As a DXer, he has no equal.
No, not at all. In fact, one of the nice things about working with Tim is in ham radio, where the contesters like to give back to the hobby. So at the largest ham fest in the U.S. called Dayton Hamvention, Tim has Contest University, which is a full Thursday.
That's great.
We keep telling him he needs to go to Wednesday, Thursday to get everything in. But him, as well as many of the other top contesters from all over the world, have classes to teach people on proper etiquette and how to do contesting.
I want to turn off this Mike DeRose Collins transmitter because it's pretty loud, and we're not going to be doing AM right now. I think I'll just power that guy down. Ah, that's a lot quieter. So everybody knows Ray Novak, and let me give you a little bit of the backstory here. Ray Novak from ICOM was very kind to set us up with a really great rig here. I mean, we've got ICOM 7800. I had purchased the 92A handy talkie. I've been using that for some time on UHF and VHF. But he set us up with this great HF radio, the 9100. We could talk to satellites and all sorts of stuff with that. That goes up into the gigahertz range. And also a 2820 for D-Star. So I've got a really nice setup here. But then we put a Yagi antenna up on the roof. And we were getting something like S9 on the meter here, just from noise, background noise. We realized it wasn't going to be usable at 20 meters or 10.
And it wasn't just limited to here. Gordo and Bob,
they went up on the roof
of the town.
Yeah.
And noise was all over the city.
So we actually had a number of people here with directional antennas and noise meters and stuff. And what we found out is the LED lights in here, the cameras. This building itself, we're just radiating like crazy. And the city is bad, too, because they have smart meters. We've got a lot of neon. We've got old PG&E transformers arcing, all sorts of stuff going on. So it's pretty noisy out there. So we've been kind of, and I know, Bob, you've been very interested in this, too, trying to solve this problem. How do we use all this great gear that Ray gave us? But Ray ended up coming up with a solution.
A programmer that I've talked to a couple of times had a software package that we were able to work together to make a mirror of your 7800 here, because the goal is we've got the ICOM RSBA1, but you control that with a mouse.
In fact, we did that, of course, a couple of weeks ago. I was able to do a QSO using somebody else's radio.
Yep, you're using Drew's 7700 out in New Jersey.
Yeah, that was great, and it worked well. It uses voice over IP, Skype, I think, right, to get the audio back? Or do you use your software, use its own?
Our software does the rig control as well as the audio. But Bob's challenge to me was, you play with a computer all the time, you have a mouse all the time, so how do we make this all play and make it feel like real radio?
Let me just say up front, though, that is a great feature of the ICOM radios, that you can, from your laptop, on the road, Bob does this too. On the road, as you're going around, you can control your radio. You can use your ham shack anywhere over the internet, and I think that's a really nice feature that you're building.
If you're not able to use your shack, and there's a certain sked that you want to keep up, then
you can do it.
No problem at all.
It's really, really cool. So this is, you can see if you look at my screen, we've got this software that you were talking about is running on this laptop, and then I also see Skype video. Two K3LR. I see Tim Duffy's radio right there. It's another 7800. So this is the one I'm going to control?
That's going to be the one you're going to control. If you look, there's several things in this image. You've got four rotors. And we were talking earlier about...
Wait a minute. Now let me move the mouse over so we know. I can show you what... These are the antenna rotors. Is that right?
Rotor control boxes.
Okay.
You're going to be using four Yagis.
Oh, man.
Now, Tim's got a switch box that has 10 different combinations where you could use the top two.
Wow.
The mid high, the middle two, the bottom two.
There's Tim. Hey, Tim.
And there's Tim's control box.
That's the box. He can't really talk to us, except I guess he could do it over the radio. We're not sure if we could talk to him or not.
There's a little bit of...
There's Tim, some of the background noise.
Tim's told me a little bit earlier that the band condition started dying over to Europe, but we've got, he said, W6, W7, and down into South America. So
wow.
Well, he's already got everything.
He's aiming it, right? He's aiming it down South America way.
Everything's taken care of down there now.
This thing on the right here, this is the amplifier, right?
Yes.
1,500 watts.
So you'll
hear you.
Full legal limit.
I think that's more than some radio station. I know it's more than some radio stations I worked at. So that's pretty nice. That's pretty nice. And then, of course, the 7800 is right here with a nice, looks like a Heil PR40 mic right in front of it. Tim has good taste in mics. So now Tim doesn't contest all the time. I think somebody's told me four times a year, something like that.
This station he uses four times a year. And Tim, if I say anything wrong, just show us
a finger or something.
But he does four major contests a year from this superstation.
He was earlier panning the camera around that room, and it's a big room, is filled from floor to ceiling with awards. He's got everything.
Lawyers will have diplomas. Tim has won contest certificates. Now, each band that he contests on has two stations. And
so how many 7800s does he have?
There's a mixture of 7800s, 7700s, and a couple of 7600s mixed in there.
Wow.
But with two operators on each band, he's got it where they lock out. When one transmits, the other one completely is locked out, so he can't transmit. So that's how he's able to do it.
Wow.
One station is sitting there monitoring for a multiplier or a call that they really need to get in a log. They'll be able to transmit when the other guy is receiving.
Got it.
And it's surprising how quickly a score will go up.
So it's really a team effort.
It is a huge team effort because there's 24 operating positions.
12 listening, 12 transmitting?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
And they've got one coming up this weekend. CQ Worldwide is coming up this weekend and he's going to be operating.
Wow.
And if you get a chance to go, it's a beautiful thing to watch.
Well, I would love to just, we have to get some video of this going on during the contest. It must be a madhouse in there.
Actually, we did a ICOM Radio News a few years back.
Oh, good. So
ICOM Radio News number 5.
Oh, good.
On our ICOM America YouTube page. And it's by far our most widely watched video on there. And it goes through showing his antenna farm, the house where everything's built.
Oh, I've seen this video. Yeah.
So.
And the room here. So this 7800 then is in effect slaved to the 7800 in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
Wow. Whereabouts now, in Pennsylvania are we? Do you know?
We're in western Pennsylvania, and okay. I'm just curious, Alex. Have we showed the antenna yet?
Let's show the antenna we're going to use here.
Let's show the antenna compared to what we were seeing with Terry.
Yeah, this is not in his attic.
Oh,
how many feet high is that?
Goodness. Oh. We'll hear you tonight, Leo. Yeah. Ray, what a signal.
This is better than clear channel radio, I'll tell you.
How tall is that, Ray?
I don't have it right in front of me.
Show us a sign, Tim. How tall is that antenna? Do you know? See, Tim can't talk back to us because the audio back channel is actually coming off the 7800. That's the audio we're going to hear from the radio. So,
now, Alex, it's in that email if you've got
this
it.
This knob on this 7800 here, and you can see it up here above me too. Can you get a good shot of this screen, Lynn? And so what should I do? Tell me what to do.
Right now we don't hear any signals coming in. Alex,
nope.
Can we get a little bit more audio, please?
Yeah, bring this up so we can hear it. Yep.
Let's tune up the band a little bit.
So I can use the knob to do
that. Yes, sir.
Not have to use the computer. Sound like we heard something there.
Well, the guy sounds like Donald Duck.
We're below him, so we go
up some more.
Right. It's upper sideband, right? So yes. I'll tune it until I hit it. This is part. There's an aesthetic to doing this. This is part of the fun of it. That's what you really wanted to go here.
Victor Echo 7, Whiskey November Kilo.
Roger, 217 Delta, Charlotte, Pickle.
Victor Echo 7, Whiskey November Kilo, operating remote.
Now, where we hear everybody throwing out their call signs, there's somebody else calling CQ.
Right, so they're responding to a CQ.
So they're responding.
Whiskey Tango, 6 Hotel.
Charlie. It is 5 REM 1.
This is
K9 EIDD. I think I heard Bob.
Yeah.
Bob, you sound like a duck.
Hey, Leo, they're calling you.
Oh, they're calling me?
Oh,
then. Yeah. Drop your call sign in, Leo. Come on, you can do it.
W6TWT from K9 EIDD. I'll give you a little bit of talk so you can tune in to me so I sign realistic here. And it's me. Just a little bit off. Keep coming. Keep coming. Keep coming. Keep on. Hello. 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 Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Leo, turn it to the right.
To the right? I'm going the wrong way? All right.
Yeah, get him about 239, Leo. 239.
239, all the way up there, huh?
Keep talking, Bob.
All right.
WT. All right, now he should come in clear. Go ahead, Bob.
W6TWT from K9EID.
Well, a little too far, Leo. A little back to the left. About 238.7.
You sound like Darth Vader.
He is. He's getting ready for Halloween.
He's got the costume.
Leo, give him a call and he'll tune you.
All right, so I'm going to click the transmit button.
Yeah, click the transmit button.
All right, here we go.
W6TWT.
Calling CQ.
W6TWT. CQ, CQ, CQ.
This is WD0AKX.
I think we got a pile up.
So what we can do there is we caught a partial call sign, but let's wait for Bob.
Whiskey Bravo 6 Delta Hotel Whiskey in Idaho.
Victor Echo 7 Whiskey November.
Hello there, Leo.
Alpha Juliet 5 Charlie, Arkansas.
AKX in Minnesota.
We got to work them all. Leo, pick up the Arkansas. Arkansas. Go for it, Leo.
Okay.
Arkansas. Just say Arkansas.
Arkansas, go ahead. This is W6TWT. Can you say your call signs again?
W6TWT from Alpha Juliet 5 Charlie, Bob in Arkansas.
Alpha Juliet 5 Charlie, it's good to talk to you.
Hi, over here in Texas.
Hello, Leo. Watching you on the video there. Good to hear you on the air.
Well, this is great. We were aiming for South America, but I guess Arkansas is the next best place.
Okay, I'm also running a 7800 with a little amplifier, the PW1 amplifier, and a six-element beam.
It's a nice setup. I have to say, I'm very grateful to Ray. These are beautiful radios. They're actually, even if you never use them, they're works of art. They're just gorgeous, and you can spend a day or two just lifting the manual.
Yeah, roger that. Let me say 7-3 so you pick some others up there. There's a lot of guys out there. AJ5C, we'll be listening. 7-3, Leo.
7-3, AJ5C, this is W6T. Oops, I got to keep pressing it, don't I? Yes. Yeah, 7-3, AJ5C, W6TWT. Bye-bye.
And then QRZ.
Number Kilo Remote.
I'm going somewhere else. It's too crowded in here.
It's great. Hey,
that's
Leo,
amazing.
You got a Victor Echo calling you. Go for the Victor Echo. Go ahead, Leo.
Victor Echo, this is W6TWT. Go ahead.
Victor Echo 7, Whiskey November Kilo Remote.
Victor Echo 7, Whiskey November Kilo. This is W6TWT. I believe you're in our chat room.
Correct, Leo. I am in the chat room. Victor Echo 7, Whiskey November Kilo, operating remote. Ray will be happy to know I'm on an IC7600. I'm doing it remotely over voice over IP, so the USB sound card built into the IC7600. Love that feature.
Well, you're 5'9". You sound really good. It's coming in loud and clear, and it's just great. Where are you located? You said you're remote. I guess where are you right now?
Well, I'm near Vancouver,
Vancouver. I'm in a place called Burnaby, and so is the club station, and I'm a little ways away from it. I'm at my home apartment on an IP phone, and he's over, or sorry, the other station is in another side of the city. So we're a few miles away.
That's why he's coming in a little bit better.
I'll let you grab a few more people. Really happy to talk to you on Ham Radio, and thank you very much for all that you've done for Ham Radio, and for you, Ray, for all what your company has done for us. Whiskey 6, Tango Whiskey Tango to Victor Echo 7, Whiskey November Kilo Remote.
VE7WNK, this is W6TWT. Great talking to you. Good night.
Kilo Charlie Zero.
Whiskey, bro.
Delta Delta 7, Mike Quebec.
Kilo Charlie Zero.
Kilo Charlie Zero, this is W6TWT. Go ahead.
TWT from Kilo Charlie Zero, Bravo, Mike Foxtrot. The name is John in the state of Iowa. Over.
Well, KC0BMF, this is W6TWT, Leo in the state of California. Thank you for joining us today.
Great job, Leo, KC0BMF.
Thank you, John. Great talking to you, KC0BMF, W6TWT.
Delta 7, Mike Quebec.
That's a Delta 7, Mike Quebec. Alpha, I was going to say, where is that, huh? All right, should I go with that one? Let's try it. All right. Alpha, I got to keep pressing it, don't I? Alpha Delta 7, MQ, this is W6TWT. Go ahead.
Tango Whiskey Tango. Good evening, Leo. We're listening to you on the computer, and there's a little time delay in here. The name here is Ray Romeo Alpha Yankee. I'm in Billings, Montana. Over.
Well, a pleasure meeting you, Ray. It's great to have you watching, and great to talk to you on the airwaves as well. What are you using tonight?
I'm running a TS-570 at 100 watts to a hex beam.
Well, I think you know what we're using. And I really appreciate meeting you, Ray. 87MQ, this is Whiskey 6, Tango Whiskey Tango. Good night.
Whiskey 6, Tango Whiskey Tango, Alpha Delta 7, Mike Quebec, 736.
We could go on all night doing this, but it obviously works really well. We didn't get anything too distant, but I think that's mostly because we had such a pileup. I could barely hear anything. And they sound great. Now, what you're saying, he's tuning the rotors a little bit. So he's when he hears something, he's tuning it in. In addition to tuning in the frequency, he's aiming a little bit towards it.
Well, we're controlling the frequency while he's controlling which way the antenna's pointing.
This is why it takes a team to do this.
But one of the things that we're experiencing here is what we would hear in a contest.
Right.
And what you do in a contest is the strongest one that you can copy 100%, right. You go back to them, and really the exchange is pretty short in a contest.
Right. You don't want to waste time. You just want to move on to the next one.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. Wow, that's really fun. I'm sorry I can't talk to every one of you. I mean, this is just amazing. And I, Tim, wow, what a great setup. I love it, and it worked great. I was able to tune up and down the dial, and I just feel bad that Bob Heil just got buried by everybody else.
I backed out of there.
Yeah.
I backed out, what? Leo. I didn't. You can talk to me here. No. I didn't want to. Just wanted to have frequency to dial up on. But once you saw how that worked, I got.
Wow, this is just really cool. So, I didn't look. I was tuning the dial here, but let me just look closely. I'm going to tune the dial, and will I see his dial move there as well?
You'll see the numbers, and then we're seeing the band scope.
Oh, it
right
is.
Here.
It changes right away.
But if you look a little bit higher up, there's more activity. And I remember earlier Tim saying that there was
255.
Around 255 was South America.
Let's see if we can. Thank you, Tim. Tim's zooming in for us, so we're going to go all the way up. This is great. I'm twiddling the dial, and it's actually twiddling it there. I'm going to move a little faster here. This is such a nice radio. It just, even the ballistics of the dial and everything, it just feels good.
Go get that big peak. Keep going. Get that big peak.
Yeah, it's a little bit higher up.
A little higher.
So we're
Keep going.
All right. See, okay, I'm watching it there. So I won't get that reading there. I'll have to look on the screen to see it, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. So where am I? Is that the white
triangle pointing
that
down
little
there?
Triangle point right
yeah.
there. Yeah,
okay. So I'm just trying to move up to there.
And there was a company that called Think Logical that came up with a remote DVM keyboard video mouse that you could be able to plug into the back of the 7800 and actually see the video and an IP address.
Wow, no kidding. Oh, there we go. Here we go. I'm right at that peak now, yeah. Should I just sit on it, you think? Or
keep on coming down.
Keep coming down?
We can hear him in the background.
Tuesday morning, I got everything on the site on the same day, and then, I mean, you know.
I think Tim just swung the rotor over.
Yeah, we're pointing at...
it's crazy. Actually, it was great because the locals, they had got my stuff and... liver stuff already here in the building, so that was...
So they're having a conversation, obviously.
Yes.
What would be the appropriate way to just say, can I join in? Would it wait till a pause and say my call sign, or just let them talk?
Let them talk, see what they're talking about.
If it's a personal conversation, you don't want to interrupt that.
Right, but if it's what we call a rag chew, where they're just sitting there talking about... usual topics, you can just go in and talk to them.
But this is also kind of reminds me of the fun I used to have as a kid listening for shortwave stations. You're dialing
That's
around.
Right. Yep.
It's amazing the kind of stuff that you'll find. And obviously, this is European.
Because it's such a kind of a rainforest here. And, you know, your ropes get always dangled with something. And,
might be maritime. It sounds like they're talking about... Tim's helping me.
Yeah, Tim made an adjustment here.
Well, he can see a little better than I where that peak is, right?
Up and on the top. So the top of the pole is maybe 20 meters high now. And that's where the...
Wow, this is really, really cool. So those peaks on the blue waveform, that's sound.
Right.
Is that what I'm looking at?
That's an RF signal.
Okay.
So you're actually seeing the RF and
come up above the noise floor, and that means that somebody's transmitting at that frequency.
Now, compared to what you saw here, look at what we're looking at.
Oh, yeah. Our noise was at S9. I mean, he's getting, you know, S1 or 2 down there, right?
And,
yeah. Actually, I wish bands wouldn't get too good because I think...
And it sounds like earlier they were talking about an 80-meter dipole that they were putting up. So they're talking about the same thing that
antennas.
We were earlier.
It's antennas. All about antennas, isn't it?
If they're not talking about the weather, their medication, they're talking about the antennas.
My back is killing me. All right, well, I don't want to use up all of Ham Nation. I know we've got smoke and solder still to do. And I just think this is so cool. I want to thank you so much, Ray Novak, for setting this up. I want to thank you, Tim Duffy, because K3LR, because you just have the most amazing setup in the world. And a chance to just use that and see where we could go. What a treat. What a thrill.
And it's incredible to watch the guys in the contest. I got lucky enough a few years ago. They stuck me on the night shift for 20 meters. Still was able to log a few cues. But to watch these guys in the heat of the battle just sitting there one right after another one and just watching the total cue count go up.
That's great. That's amazing. Well, you could see when we had that little mini pile up how difficult that would be. And you just got to move quickly and pick up those signs.
With the multi contest groups, if you recall, we did one on field day with W3AO.
Yes.
That's the guy that goes head-to-head with Tim, W3LPL.
So it's not all Tim's. There's some competition out there.
Oh, yeah. Each year they do something new. And
it's really great.
Tim will tell us, well, I think last year he put a new complete tower up for 15 meters.
Wow. So, Tim, you're the best. Thank you so much for your help tonight, Tim.
But this
Leo,
is his
on
hobby.
July 13th. We on episode 8, the guys can go back and look at the replays, and you'll see a whole show dedicated to Tim and K3LR. He walked us through that, so you guys and gals can go dial up episode 8 on Ham Nation, and you'll be able to see more of that station. So
very good, very good. Well, it's such a great fraternity or a group of people, and it's just really wonderful to watch how hams. Help each other, work with each other. You get to know great people doing some very interesting things.
Oh, most definitely. Now, do you want to check into the net on 20 after Ham Nation's over?
I can't tonight. I wish I could. I have to run home.
Oh, no.
I know. It's horrible. I wish I could. My wife said, when are you coming home? I said, well, I'd like to stay tonight. She said, no, we got stuff to do. So I wish I could. We're going to throw it back to you, Gordo and Bob. But thank you, Ray Novak, ICOM. You guys are so great. I just love the stuff and the great gear that you've lent us. And it's amazing what's
possible. Well, that is terrific. Well, congratulations, Leo, on your first long-range contact. You in California all the way to the East Coast. And I heard the East Coast, your station, loud and clear out here on the West Coast again. We're on 14A, the D-Star reflector after the net. And I'll be on 7208 on my local radio here. And we'll look forward to those doing it. And Bob, let me turn it over to you, and we'll smoke a little solder, huh?
Yeah, well,
thanks to Mike DeRoe for those.
That is great. Good job, Leo and Ray.
Thanks, Ray. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Congrats, Leo. Now you get a little bit of feel of what this thing is like when you push the talk switch down and you never know what's coming back. With those antennas, my goodness. But if you guys go look at episode 8 on the replays, you'll get to see K3LR. And it's a glory. And Tim, thank you very much. Ray, thank you. And thanks to Carl that helped write the programs. We're so happy for all of you that got to see this great contact. I'm glad you're tuned in to Ham Nation tonight. I want to bring in our good friend George. He's been out there on the side watching all this. George, were you able to hear Leo when he fired it up down there in Mississippi?
Well, I couldn't really hear him, Bob, and hi, everyone. There were so many other stations on there. It was just a pile up, but I'm glad he got on tonight. Maybe we can get him back on the air again soon.
We'll do that. We'll do that. Have you been getting your soldering all in all warmed up here for us? Are we going to see some things tonight?
I've got it warmed up, and tonight we're going to look at making your first PC board, a little simple method that almost anyone could do. And I know we're running behind, so let's get on with it.
All right.
In the early days of electronic circuitry, most wiring was done point to point, and some still is today, particularly guitar amplifiers and linear amplifiers. As components became smaller and circuits more complex, the need to move to a different wiring method was necessary. So we moved to the printed circuit board, which is copper traces on a non-conductive surface. If we wanted to experiment with some printed circuit board today, we might start with perf board. Here's a piece that I've had for several years, and you could see I've taken several pieces off of it before for various projects. There are copper traces on the board that have holes drilled in them, and these have been 10 on this particular board, and they're in columns there, and there's also a row across that's connected together for a bus. This is double-sided board, so there's traces on both sides. If our project used an integrated circuit, we would mount it on the perf board to where it would connect across two separate sets of columns there. So the bottom row here will connect to these traces, and the top pins will connect to these other traces. Now we can just put our components between the different traces on the board here. Now, if we had a capacitor that needed to be in this circuit at this particular point, we would just slide it into the traces that are connected to those pins of the IC. If our circuit had a resistor, we'd bend the leads on it and position it in the correct location. We might want to add a potentiometer to it, and in this case, we could use a printed circuit board mounted potentiometer, and we might want to add some terminal strips so that we could connect wires to the board easily. We can add more components to the perf board or put jumper wires in between individual traces here as needed to complete our circuit. Now, perf boards are great if you're prototyping or building a simple circuit, but sometimes you might need to get a little more sophisticated. In that case, we might want to look at building our own printed circuit board. We'd begin with a piece of copper-clad board. Now, this particular board is single-sided, but it does come in double-sided varieties as well. What we would do is put traces on top of the copper here that were made with resist ink of some type so that when we dump this board into our acid bath, the places we had put traces would remain and all the other bare exposed copper would be eaten away. Copper clad board may have a protective film on it, or in some cases it could have tarnish on it. In either event, we'll always want to prepare our copper board properly first by using some Scotch-Brite or some steel wool to polish the board and get it good and shiny before we start. There are several methods we could use to get our traces onto the board. We're going to use the most primitive one of all today, though. We're going to use an ink resist pen, which is just a common Sharpie. That works about as well as anything else in this method. The circuit we're going to build today is so simple that I didn't even bother drawing a schematic. We're going to take a normal LED and we'll add a resistor to it to drop the voltage. And just because we can, we're going to put a capacitor in there that serves absolutely no purpose. We'll draw the pads for the LED first, and we'll go over it several times so that we're getting a good heavy concentration of ink on there so that the copper doesn't get eaten away at that point. And we'll put our LED down here to see how far apart these need to be, and we'll draw the next pad. And we'll put these fairly close together, but we'll be careful that they don't touch each other. Our pad on the left will be the negative LED terminal. So we'll draw a trace down to the bottom here and make us a ground bus across the bottom of the board. And we'll be careful that we fill in this area good, there again, so that the acid doesn't eat through the copper at this point. We'll beef up the traces around the corner a little just for extra measure. And then we'll put another pad out here at the end of the bus, and this is going to be where we'll connect our negative power supply lead. We'll also need a pad for our positive power supply lead, and we'll put a little plus down on that. Now, a resistor will go in series with our LED, so we'll want to determine where to draw that. And we'll put the resistor right here. We'll make a couple of pads for it. And that's kind of close, but that should work well enough. We'll draw one more trace from the other side of the resistor down to the positive power supply terminal. And we'll add in a couple of pads here for our capacitor, which serves no purpose. Our traces certainly look ugly enough, but they should work. We're going to test them out anyway. And let's add us a Ham Nation logo to the board now. And, of course, a copyright notice. For this project, we're going to use Radio Shack PC Board Etchant Solution. It contains ferric chloride. Now, there are a number of other chemicals that you can etch with. Even some household chemicals work, but this is what I've got and we're going to use this week. Now, to etch in, we're going to need us a tray, and it needs to be made of plastic, glass, or rubber so that the etching doesn't eat through it. We'll position our PC board in the bottom of the tray, and we'll pour about 1/4 inch of etching over it, being careful not to spill any or get any on our hands. You should really be wearing rubber gloves, and you should always read the instructions on your etching before you begin. Now, this etching will work better if it's a little bit warm and if it's agitated frequently to help the action.
Get busy, you jugheads. We got a lot of work to do.
I'll use a plastic fork ever so often to agitate the board and to pull it up so that we can have a look and see how our process is going. It's been a little less than a minute, and we can see that the board has already changed colors a little, but we've got a long way to go yet. This should take 15 to 20 minutes. I'm going to hang a 120-watt flood lamp right above our fluid here so that we can heat it up a little bit and hopefully speed the process along. We've been etching for about 5 minutes now, occasionally stirring and agitating the liquid. Let's pull up the board to have a look. Well, there's still a lot of copper on there. If we look real hard right around the edges, we might see where some of the copper is beginning to come off. So let's put it back in the acid bath and give it some more time. It's been 15 minutes now, and as we pull up the board, we can plainly see around the edges now that we're seeing a little brown, and that's the board underneath the copper. So work for sure, but at 15 minutes, we haven't gotten as far as I would have hoped. We're at 18 minutes now, and we can plainly see that some copper is eaten away, quite a bit of it. There's still some here in the middle that's got to be gotten rid of yet, but the last few minutes of the process here seems to show the biggest difference. After 22 minutes in the acid bath, it seems we've achieved success. I don't see any copper left on the board.
All right.
The only thing on there appears to be our traces. So I'm going to take this out of the tank now, and I'm going to use an old pair of needle-nose pliers that I don't care anything about to grab it with. I'm going to take it outside and rinse it off real quickly, and then I'll meet you at the bathroom sink. We've completed etching now, and we need to neutralize the acid to stop its action. The best way to do that is to rinse our board under clean, cool water for several minutes. Don't tell my wife, but we're going to use the porcelain sink in the bathroom for this. Yeah, that's better than using the stainless steel sink in the kitchen. We'll follow Radio Shack's instructions on disposing of the etching as well. We'll use a little denatured alcohol now to get the resist ink off of the board, and then we'll inspect it. We'll notice that there are some areas where the ink must not have covered good, and we had a little more acid action there eating off the copper than we expected, particularly up here in the letter. You can see where I stopped with the pen at various points that the trace looks thicker. And the logo over here looks pretty thin, but it's there. Now, if we look at the traces, we'll see some areas that look like they're pretty thin. But overall, I think we've got a good conductive trace here, and we'll be able to use this. To drill the holes in the board, we're going to use one of our favorite motorized tools. Yes, the Dremel tool. And we're going to use a number 64 PC board bit, which is 1/32 of an inch. Now, I'm going to crank up the Dremel tool to real high speed so that we can poke the holes right on through. We've got the holes drilled in the board now, and we notice that they don't end up right in the middle of the patch where they should, but they're close enough. You probably noticed that as I was drilling, the board jerked every time I touched it with the Dremel. We would have been better putting this in a vise to hold it still. We've placed all the components in their respective holes, and we should have a working LED circuit. Now let's solder this together real quick. Let's connect 12 volts to this project now and see if it works. Another successful smoke and solder project. And it's bypassed with an unnecessary capacitor.
Wonderful. Another great smoke and solder. There was smoke and there was solder. Did you see that, Gordo? That was cool.
I did. Only the best, and I'm sure he'll have that for Halloween for all those kids that come by and want to see the latest in copper etching.
Absolutely. We are ready to go here in Illinois with our Halloween, and hopefully everybody will have a safe Halloween. One thing we're going to do in St. Louis is a Halloween ham fest, and this is an incredible thing. It was started years ago by the youth movement at one of the local clubs, and the kids put this ham fest together, and it's still going after all these many years. A lot of the kids are grown and gone, but it's been taken over by other people here in the St. Louis area, and the Halloween ham fest is up and running for this weekend. We're happy to see it still going, and that brings up the topic of next month. We're going to have a month of youth. And talk about youth. Look at this. Talk about that. Look at George.
Kids, well, you guys, yeah, next month is kids, George. You're going to fit right in. Go ahead, Bob. Tell them about kids month next month.
Well, next month, we're going to have a lot of kids on here, and they'll start next week with W0EEE. It's the ham station and ham club at the Rolla School of Mines, and those guys will be on to tell you how that all happened. So we'll get it all together for next week. George, thanks so much. That was really super, and I appreciate all that you do. My gosh, so great. And thanks to Tim and W9ZRX, who put that all together, by the way. There were a lot of people behind the scenes to make this happen tonight, and we really appreciate it. And, of course, the big congrats is to Leo for getting on the air and feeling what ham radio is all about, getting to turn those knobs.
Hey, Bob and Gordo.
Just
one thing from the studio. That last bit of communications we heard on Leo's radio was Ascension Island.
Oh, my goodness.
That's great.
Isn't that amazing?
We were right on the edge of some rare DX, and we had no idea.
Wow. So Leo is going to stay there all night and work DX on the ICOM gear, right?
Yeah.
That was Zulu Delta 8 Oscar.
Wow. You know where Ray's going to be tonight? He's going to be sleeping right there at the studio. Ray, thanks again for making this all happen and your complete team. Happy Halloween.
Oh, happy Halloween. Thank you, Gordon. And have a good one, Bob.
Well, thanks very much everybody that put this together, and we'll see you again here next week when we bring all this together. We're headed out to Las Vegas for the old PBR finals, so anybody in Las Vegas, look us up at the old bull riding finals, and we'll be there. Otherwise, we'll see you on Facebook. You know, you can always catch a lot of things going on our Facebook pages. And emails, you got our email address for Gordo, George, and I. Let us know what we can do to make this even better, and we're going to keep trying each week. Thanks very much, George. You look so great. I wanted to tell you, you look so great.
And I just want to know if it's
himself.
Is it as hard for you to breathe in that, Gordo, as it is for me to breathe in this?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I had a great time tonight, and it sure was good to finally see the segment on indoor antennas. I know that's going to help out a lot of folks. And it was also great to get Leo on HF again. So maybe again soon, and we'll be talking about PC boards and some better ways to make them in the future.
7-3, everybody. We will talk to you next week here on Ham Nation.